So the topic tonight is dana, and its translation generally is generosity. It literally means giving, and it's been, I think, kind of colloquialized to in the present time to usually refer to the offering of the meal to the monks, but it's a lot bigger topic. You might wonder how a topic like giving can be so complicated. But there's many parts to it. What's most important is the intention behind the giving, you can say. And then there's the actual act of giving. And then there's the attitude we have. And then there's the character of the person and the giver and the receiver. And there's different categories of the receiver, the quality or the benefits from giving are also qualified. So there's quite a wide range of different aspects to the whole practice of giving. The most, the most basic one is that, to keep it simple, is that the act of giving is most beneficial when the person who gives and is in the right state of mind, the right character, and the receiver is also the similar, or even more advanced, if you like. The more kind of spiritually evolved the giver and the receiver is, the more the act of generosity is beneficial. Maybe in even a kind of a, not just a practical mundane sense, but in a kind of a higher spiritual sense. You know, maybe one of the most beneficial acts of generosity is the gift of Dhamma, giving the gift of Dhamma. So probably the greatest act of generosity ever created in the world, maybe, this is a bit speculative, is when the Buddha gave his first teaching. And one of the disciples could understand it. But then there were two enlightened beings in the world. So it wasn't just a beneficial act in the practical sense. You know, the Buddha didn't need any more merit, didn't need any more good karma. But through the act of generosity of his act of giving the teachings, then other beings could understand it and benefit. And that was the beginning, of course, of the whole process of the Buddha's teachings being disseminated, and which comes down to us today. So one of the great acts of generosity, I mean, the Buddha could have just sat under the Bodhi tree in India and in the bliss of realization and not kind of bother himself to teach, you know, and get a sore throat. And then there's stories of people misunderstanding what he said also, and kind of giving him a hard time. Of course, it didn't bother him any, but the act of generosity, first of all, is the intention behind it. And you can appreciate something like intention or volition or will is a very changeable thing. If we're observing our mind, for example, we notice how our mind changes so quickly, and so we can have maybe a good intention to start off with, but maybe there's something a little bit behind it. You know, why do we actually give something? Is it is there some kind of just a you know a mundane practical reason? You know, think, well, if I give something, they'll thank me, or they'll look upon me favorably, or something. Is it something much deeper? Is it a real act of sort of spontaneous, selfless activity or movement of the heart, of the mind? You know, as I mentioned before, that a lot of the Buddhist scriptures, they're actually trying to give guidance for how to live skillfully in the world. So a lot of the Buddha's teachings have to do with things like generosity, morality, and then there's some about meditation too. but usually the minority of them are about meditation. But he mentions, for example, that ways to give, very skillful ways to give, five of them, the most beneficial, for the act of generosity to be most beneficial, are that one gives in faith, one has faith in the giving and the ones who's receiving the gift, one gives with deference, one gives at the appropriate time, one gives with unconstrained heart. This is a direct translation from the Pali Canon. So, unconstrained heart, I assume to be that one is giving without thoughts of holding back. One is just giving kind of most generously. And then one gives without hurt to self or other. So one is doing it with great, with metta, with friendliness, with compassion, and not causing any hurt or distress to anybody, oneself or others. And maybe there is some mention, for example, that sometimes people give because they were coerced into it. And that's not a very good state of mind if you're coerced into giving. But, you know, it is a little bit self-disparaging or a little bit destructive to oneself, if you like, hurtful to oneself. One's coerced into it. You know, somebody puts down their donation and then you think, well, I got to, you know, gazump them. I have to go one up, you know. They give $100, they give $110. It's not really coming from our heart, coming from free will. And we aren't just, it's an act of spontaneous generosity. One is kind of a bit of coercion involved in it. And important is the intention, in the sense that one isn't doing it for self-gratification. You know, people give with a great variety of different intentions. Some people give because they want to be, you know, looked upon or praised or something. Others because it's maybe it's a tradition in the family. Others because they want to go to heaven. One of the mentions of how giving can be of most benefit, again, a direct quotation, one is no self-seeker. One isn't seeking for one's self-benefit. One is not wrapped up in getting results from it. One is seeking no reward. One is not thinks about enjoyment, enjoying the fruits of this act of generosity. So usually, you can probably appreciate that most people, they would probably make an act of generosity, giving something, usually with some practical result in mind, you know. I'm giving it because I want to get some reward, either in this world or in the next world or something. And granted, there is, you know, in the Buddhist tradition, there is mentions that some benefits from giving, that one does get a favorable rebirth. But who knows? It's kind of like one of those unfulfilled and you know, you can't prove it, you know. So I could just kind of, maybe I could promise you, say, if you're generous and you get reborn in the heaven realm, but how do you confirm it? Or how do I confirm it? One of those kind of empty promises, maybe. And it probably isn't right either, because it depends upon your state of mind. If one is giving with the intention to get some result from it, the Buddha is saying, oops, it's not going to have real benefit then. Even though your act of generosity is in itself is a very beneficial, noble, wholesome thing. But because it's focused on a certain result, it's limited. It doesn't get its full benefit. It's not fulfilled in its greatest possibility then. And then there is a variety of where the act of generosity will bring the most result, in the sense of the act, who one is giving to. The most beneficial one is when the giver is virtuous and the receiver is virtuous. In another occasion, another place in the scriptures, it mentions that the results are most beneficial when one gives to somebody of right view. And then there's a whole list, there's a whole list of different people, different groups of people, going down the list from even giving a gift to an animal. Then the Buddha says, this offering is repaid 100-fold. Giving a gift to an animal. Giving a gift to an unvirtuous person, the offering is repaid 1,000-fold. I don't know how he gets repaid, but you give one grain of rice to a mouse, you get 100 grains back. I don't know. If you give a gift to a virtuous person, it's repaid 100,000-fold. And it's also mentioned the purpose, the real purpose of the act of generosity. Of course, in a practical sense, one does maybe get certain benefits, in the sense that if you are a generous person, then people will praise you and look up to you maybe. The highest purpose is for peace of mind. When one gives an act, practice of generosity in the kind of most fulfilling sense, one just feels good. One feels an openness of heart, a lightness of heart by giving. Even joy can arise sometimes. And higher than that is that it's a basis for calm and insight meditation. The reflection on generosity, there's 40 meditation objects. One of the meditation objects is reflecting or contemplating your acts of generosity. Of course, it implies that one does do acts of generosity regularly, that one can actually reflect upon it. When one can do this, then the mind calms down, the mind's very peaceful. They say that when one reflects upon, when one is actually doing the act of generosity, and in its widest or most fulfilled sense, and when one is recollecting one's acts of generosity, at that time the mind is free from greed, aversion, delusion. The mind is very uplifted, the mind's in a very relaxed and very wholesome state then. Just similarly to developing meditation practice. Some people, they try quite hard to try and calm their mind down and try and make their mind clearer and more energy in their mind. But if they did an act of generosity, or you could reflect or recollect an act of generosity they did, maybe the mind does come very calm and very centered and very peaceful then. And a very good foundation for calm and insight meditation. I think the recollection of the of your generosity, generally it's not a meditation which leads to insight, but it is a meditation which can lead to quite peaceful states of mind, to calm meditation. And then from the calm is a very good foundation for insight then. And then there's the benefits which one gets from generosity, if you need to actually know some real benefits from it. I mean, they're kind of practical benefits which, on one hand, they shouldn't be the prime reason for being generous, but they are certain practical results of being generous. For example, that people are very fond of one. People like generous people, don't they? If somebody is generous, you want to go around them because they might give you something, maybe. But they're kind of open people. See? Being generous is like an open-hearted, isn't it? And they are people who are liked by wise and good people. One gets a good reputation as being a generous, kind, open-hearted person. Generally, there's kindness there, too. In order to be generous, you need to be kind as well. One is able to be more self-restrained. If one is generous and one is not practicing greed, taking to oneself, one is giving out. So one has some more self-restraint. And they say you have a happy rebirth in a happy heaven realm. But who knows? But another occasion, the Buddha was talking to somebody and he just said, if there is a wise teacher around, who would they teach first? Somebody who isn't giving alms, who doesn't keep the precepts, or somebody who does, is generous, who does keep the precepts? And the person answered, well, you know, they'd probably teach the one who is generous, the one who does keep the precepts, they'd probably teach them first. The one who is moral or virtuous and is generous, they are more inclined to be the ones that receive the teachings, because people would be more inclined to seek them out or go to them, or they'd put themselves in a situation where they'd be exposed to people who could teach them maybe. And the whole principle of dana, generosity, this is within another category of the Buddhist teachings called the foundations of merit, punya. Merit, meritorious or beneficial or wholesome activities. Sometimes the practice of merit making, you know, the practical way to make merit is generosity usually. That's what, especially in Southeast Asia, especially Thailand, for example, people there have really perfected the art of generosity. That's one of the main kind of virtuous activities, generosity. But the Buddha mentions there are three of them: generosity, morality, and meditation. The three areas where we can develop meritorious, beneficial, or skillful actions, skillful kamma, if you like. You know, generally speaking, it seems that generosity is the easiest one. Many people came today to the monastery, the Laotian people, for the to commemorate the entering of the rains retreat. And there were even some young children who were putting rice in the bowl. Even children can be generous. The second one is keeping the precepts. But, you know, I mean, maybe a little bit harder for children to keep the precepts sometime. Huh? If there's a ant crawling around, they might step on it, you know. I remember somebody in Malaysia was telling me about this. They have two young children, and they say it's very hard to keep the precepts with young children because there's mosquitoes flying around that might bite them, and there's ants crawling around that might bite them. You know, so they have to protect the children. Okay. So, I mean, I just told them that, well, if you're doing it, you know, killing the insects for a good intention, it's not so bad karma. It's still bad to kill, but you have good intentions. You're not doing it out of aversion for the insect. You're doing it out of compassion for your children. And the third one is meditation. So, I mean, as we can see tonight, you know, fewer people come to meditation than come in the morning to offer the meal. Meditation is a little bit harder, maybe, for more people to practice. Although if they understand what the principle of meditation is, they probably realize as much is very simple. I was trying to tell the people this morning that, you know, meditation is all in your own mind. And you come to a peaceful place and your mind is calmed down or calmer than before. And if you remember that and can connect with that or reconnect with that, you can take it home with you then. And you don't have to keep up that busy mind in your everyday life situation. If you've experienced a bit of peacefulness, a bit of quiet, perhaps you can reconnect with that wherever you are then. But for most people, still the practice of generosity is a much more, it means a bit of a social event and much easier for people to do. But the Buddha is talking about how this generosity is actually, you know, within the wider context, it's a very wholesome, beneficial, noble and very good karma to create. But as I mentioned, there's three kinds: generosity, morality, meditation. So in one of these scriptures, very interesting one, the Buddha talks about the increasing benefit of gifts. So the Buddha was saying that even though somebody was telling a story about actually one of his previous lives, his former lives, and as I mentioned yesterday, last week, these 10 paramitas are based upon the previous lives of the Buddha. 10 of these 10 perfections, 10 virtuous spiritual qualities the Buddha developed over his many previous lifetimes, they say. The Buddha refers to a previous lifetime when he was some Brahmin, I think it was, and he made all these incredibly generous gifts, and all kinds of different things. He gave food and clothing and lights and all kinds of things. But he said, unfortunately, at that time, there was nobody who could properly receive those offerings. Even though he gave all these in terms of amount, they were a lot. But there's nobody there who was actually worthy to receive them. There's no virtuous people, I guess. And he said, rather than give all those things to unvirtuous people, if you give it to somebody with right view, it would have been much more beneficial. And then he goes through a whole list. Better to give to a Sakadagami, which is a non-returner, no, once-returner. These are different levels of awakening, see? And then an Anagami, an Arahant, goes to the list. And then he mentions that even more beneficial than feeding the whole Sangha with the Buddha at the head would be to build a monastery with a kitchen in it. And even more beneficial than that, this is where it goes on now to, it changes from just generosity now. Rather than giving all those incredible gifts to the Sangha and all the and the Buddha at the head, and building a monastery is taking the refuges, taking refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha. This means that, you know, one really needs to not only just take on and recite the formula, but one needs to really open one's heart to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha as some kind of fundamental to one's life. You know, a refuge in wisdom, truth, and virtue. Buddha Dhamma Sangha, that's one way of putting it. But even higher than that is keeping the precepts, keeping the five precepts. And then it goes on into meditation. Even higher than making all that generous offerings and keeping the precepts is to practice metta, friendliness. For the mere, you just said, to practice a fragrance of metta. Just a fragrance, whatever that is. For the time that an incense stick burns down. And the highest kind of benefit of skillful action is to experience impermanence, even for a finger snap. It sounds easier, doesn't it? Than making all these incredible generous offerings and building a monastery and keeping the precepts. And the highest form, of course, is, you can see this is, now the Buddha is talking about generosity, taken to its highest degree, then keeping the precepts, morality, and then finally meditation as the kind of culmination of the most beneficial actions. Even just for a finger snap, experiencing impermanence. But of course, all of these, you know, like the experience of impermanence, easier said than done. And for most people, what's required is a foundation, generosity, morality, meditation. You know, these days people, they look at meditation, they think, oh, that's what I need, because it's quite different than what they normally are familiar with. Something new to this culture. You know, in most Western cultures, they're very active, all mostly engaged in a lot of creating, building, doing things, and then they come across, they feel a bit imbalanced, and they come across meditation. You know, that's what I appreciated about Buddhism, meditation. There's all kinds of learning I could do at university. You know, I could also get a job and make lots of money and all this, but there was no opportunity to practice meditation in the West. I had to go to Asia to find that out. In the Asian culture, for example, knowing this about the Buddhist teachings, and knowing there is sort of a gradation then, one needs to have a foundation. And generosity, the very act of generosity is an attitude. If we have the right attitude, it's an attitude of opening up, of letting go, of giving up, of the self, which is what meditation is designed to also facilitate. We have an insight into impermanence. What we're seeing is the impermanence of any substantial, permanent, abiding self. But in order to experience that, usually we need to start off with practice of generosity, actually opening up from the self. If I'm me, I'm trying to see impermanence, you won't. There's a permanent person trying to see impermanence. So you're stuck in this endless kind of closed cycle then. There's the permanent self trying to see the impermanent self. It won't happen. But through the act of generosity, here we are actually living the practice of stepping outside, giving up of the ego, giving up of the self. Instead of keep reinforcing it, with taking things to yourself with greed, or defending it with aversion, confusion, delusion, one's actually practicing letting go in a very practical, mundane, everyday sense. And even one has insights into impermanence to some degree, but if we aren't able to practice it, actually let go of our conceit, our arrogance, our views and opinions about ourselves, then it doesn't really have much effect. You know, those insights, and they're contained, or just like memories now, they're just in a very small part of our brain. And the rest of the brain is filled up with myself, so it's not going to work very well. You know, so the Buddha was talking about, you know, the how to, you can say, work at this particular purpose of spiritual practice at many different levels. I mean, just being able to practice generosity, you know, I don't like that. I don't want to give that up. I want to keep that for me, 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 me. Yeah, and sometimes just being able to break through that. You could actually have an experience of selflessness, of anatta. Sometimes just stepping outside yourself, putting it down for a moment anyway. And I can believe that some people, you know, like you know, in the morning when the monks collect our food in the morning in Thailand, or this morning we collected some rice from the people who came here. I can imagine that some of the people could experience some degree of selflessness in that act of giving. You know, just giving up with their spoonful of rice. And if their mind was if they had faith and deference and in time, with unconstrained heart, they could very probably experience some degree of selflessness. Maybe not everybody can do that. I mean, you know, that's where now the practice of generosity and meditation now work together, because as I mentioned, it depends upon the intention. You know, some people might be making that offering, you know, and then the thought comes up in their mind, oh, I'm going to go to heaven. I'm going to go to rice heaven with this. Give two spoons and I go twice to heaven. And that they're that act of, they're the unconstrained heart, and that very noble intention now got kind of closed over, because they were thinking about themselves, or they're thinking about the result of it. And they missed a great opportunity there. They could have been enlightened on the spot. They could have an experience of anatta right there, non-self, but then their mind wandered into desire for some result, and the self came into it and clouded over their clear mind then. Then there are some acts, some of the ways that people make the offerings, like after the little ceremony of taking the precepts, one of the people leads this chant, where they actually make the Pali formula for making the offerings. And these simple rituals, you can say, well, there's still, you know, there's still a lot of self in that, but perhaps it can help them focus their mind, this act of generosity. Many of them probably don't even know what the formula is, the Pali formula. But they see this, you know, some of the children are watching their parents do this. And just by doing that act, focusing on it, perhaps they realize some degree of, you know, focused attention. And this act of selflessness, of giving up, of letting go of themselves, to a small degree anyway. You know, so the whole foundation, I mean, it's not only a matter of generosity as a practical way that the monks keep fed, but it's the whole foundation of spiritual practice. You know, and some people might look upon it as kind of the lower practice. You know, like I say, maybe if I present that formula, the three kinds of meritorious action in generosity, morality, meditation, might think, oh, maybe there's, you know, I want the highest one, meditation, and the lowest one is dana, generosity. But actually, you know, without a good foundation, one can maybe try and do the meditation practice. But if we're meditating with those same attitudes, you know, that I'm a self-seeker, I'm meditating for self-seeking. Well, I'm looking for myself, aren't I? Well, I'm meditating because I'm wrapped up in a result. I'm sitting here meditating because I want to get a result out of it. I'm seeking a reward, you know. I'm looking for to enjoy meditation practice. Yeah? If I'm having that attitude, then again we're not going to get the real result out of it. It's not going to be most beneficial. Now, the same attitude which supports generosity is also supporting meditation practice, spiritual practice, beyond self-seeking, beyond looking for a result, beyond trying to get some result out of it. So we start off with that attitude in simple things like generosity, with giving up of a spoonful of rice, of a donation for the monastery, of, you know, giving our time, our energy to support not only the monastery but other people, even feeding the animals. We create that attitude in our simple everyday life. We have the good, right foundation then for meditation practice. And then not only is it a foundation, but it's also creating the right attitude that our spiritual or meditation practice will have benefit then, or most benefit. And again, no guarantee, but the right conditions are there anyway. When we talk about generosity, we usually think of it as practical terms of, you know, food or donations or some support. But there's generosity as just the gift of Dhamma, for example. Sharing being a mentor for somebody, sharing our wisdom, sharing our understanding with people. You know, and having the time to do that. And some situations provide that more than others. You know, I mean, somebody needs to have something to say, I guess, before they can have much benefit, much use. You know? So if we actually have developed the practice, you know, we become, in a way, the result of our practice, and then we are able to offer more. Yeah, we practice generosity in the spiritual practice. And then it becomes a way that we can actually increase our practice of generosity. But now we're doing it in a different way. We're doing it by teaching Dhamma, or teaching other people, or guiding other people, or being an example for other people. You know, for example, somebody who practices generosity, they become an example for other people to also join in that activity, become, see the benefit and maybe reap the result of that, the joy of that too. Because they are generous people, so they become a guiding light for other people to also follow that. And so generosity, you know, it's, you know, unfortunately it's been kind of, you know, colloquialized, as I said, just to offering the food to the monks. But there are a great variety of ways. And this really means a kind of a generosity of heart. And we practice it in practical ways, but the end result is it becomes a way that we relate to the world then. And somebody who has a much more of a generosity of heart, you'd say, like an open heart, I recognize they can kind of flow a bit easier with things. You know, they're much more generous to themselves and other people. And they're more generous to themselves. They aren't so self-critical, for example. They aren't so self-critical of other people. You know, they're a bit more generous in their attitudes and their way of seeing things. And of course, in my position, I've seen many acts of generosity in my time. And when I was in Thailand, one of our practices was to, after about 5 years as a monk, was to go wandering in the countryside. And in the monastery, people are very generous, but there's also a kind of a form to it. You know, but being outside the monastery, one has to rely upon kind of the spontaneous generosity of people. You know, there was one time I went to this marketplace. You know, in some places in Thailand, they don't expect monks to come there, so they aren't waiting for us. Especially up in North Thailand, people have to cook the rice beforehand, and so they expect you to kind of let them know you're coming, so they have the rice already prepared. But if I turn up unannounced, sorry. I went through one village, I remember, and in Northeast Thailand, we get up very early in the morning to go an alms round, about 6 o'clock or 5:30 even. People are up very early and they have the rice already cooked. But in North Thailand, because it's cold, I guess, they get up very late. So I got up, you know, 6 o'clock, went in this village, and they're all saying, "Oh, sorry, the rice isn't cooked yet. The rice isn't cooked yet." I went to the next house. "Sorry, the rice isn't cooked yet. Sorry, the rice isn't cooked yet." So I went all through the village and no rice. So, it's going to be a hungry day today. And I turned around and went to go back again, and everybody gave me rice because it was cooked by then. And I had a whole bowl full of rice. Only one package of biscuits, and all the rest was rice. Another time went through a village, and I had quite a bit of food already, but this woman came chasing after me on her bicycle. You know, about a couple of kilometers outside the village, she chased after me on the bicycle to give me some more food. I said, "Wow, that was being generous." I mean, another time I went through the marketplace, and I had enough food already, so I was going outside to the rice fields to try and find a place where I could sit quietly and have my meal. And there was another woman came along, and she saw me by surprise, out in the rice field, middle of the rice field, not a place where a monk usually is. And she stopped and she's, "Oh, wait. And she had her food with her. And I presume she's going out to the rice field with her lunch. But she stopped me and then she proceeded to give me all her food. Everything. She had about this food carrier on with his trays, you see, 4 or 5 trays. And she took them all out carefully and emptied them all into my bowl. And I was going to say to her, save some for yourself. But she gave me all her food, and then she got on a bicycle and rode off to the rice field and would have been hungry the whole day. Meanwhile, my bowl was full to the top. I couldn't eat it all. Even if I was walking around Thailand, I still couldn't eat it all. So after I had finished my meal, I still had quite a bit left over. I said, "What to do with it?" Now I'm out in the rice field, and I saw this young boy walk. He's feeding the buffaloes, walking past over there. So I called him over, and I gave him this whole bag of food. He almost fell off his buffalo. He never had so much food at once, probably. There's many different ways which people practice generosity, of course, you know, and what important is to look at one's intentions behind it. Because in a way, you know, the act of generosity has these great potentials. You know, it's a great potential for realizing, not only establishing a very, very good foundation for spiritual practice, but I could say even possibly leading to awakening. One can really understand generosity, one can understand letting go. Letting go of the self, letting go of the ego. You know, and those moments come along to us, you know, occasionally, and if we have already the good foundation already established, it's right there. We already have, as it were, practiced letting go, giving up of the ego. In some moments in meditation, when you notice yourself coming up, you can Your attitude is right there, already established, letting go of it. Don't hang on to it. Don't play with it. Just let it go. And I just want to finish with a story of from when I was in England. There was one woman who came there to, she had cancer, and she was coming there to the monastery for her last days to live in the monastery. And because she was obviously dying, and she was a very good meditator as well, that she allowed us to go in and sit with her, have a vigil with her, to be with her at the last moment. And so one time I was in there with some of the other monks and nuns in her room, and she was breathing very, very heavily. I think she had liver cancer. And she was breathing very, very heavily, and then the breathing got slower and slower and slower, and then it stopped. And we thought, that's it. But then she started breathing again. And then she opened her eyes and said, oh, sorry, not yet. And the next thought was, pass out the sweets. Pass out the sweets to all the monks and nuns. But interesting, she related what her experience was, because she was a very good meditator. Her breathing is getting more and more shallow. What she experienced was that the four elements, the body, in the Buddhist terms, the body is made of four elements: earth, fire, water, air, the material elements. And she experienced that these four elements began to separate. The earth go to the earth, the water to the water, the air to the air, the fire to the fire. And they began to separate. Then they stopped. And they came back together again. And she started breathing once again. Because the elements didn't completely separate. There's no more physical basis for consciousness or the life force, so it would have dissolved. But the four elements, the physical, came back again, and she came back to life again. And interesting enough that she, even though she had this cancer, I think it was liver cancer, which is supposedly very, very painful, but she had no pain. And the nurses couldn't believe it, you know. But my interpretation anyway was that she was such a generous person all her life. Whenever she would come to the monastery, she always would give things, and she was just so giving all the time. Now, when she got this cancer again, she was ready to give up her life. She didn't want to take chemotherapy again and go through all that process. She just said, "I'm ready to let go." You know, very brave lady. And through her generosity, her years of generosity, she knew how to let go. When it came to the final letting go of her body, she didn't hang on to it, so she didn't have the pain. If she was holding on to her body, she would have been held on to the pain in the body too. But it was a practical example of her letting go, that she could let go of the pain. And shortly afterwards, she did die. She just passed away very, very peacefully, just letting go. And it was a great privilege, actually, to be with her, because she could really just, it was so peaceful. Be in that room. It was like a really sacred space where other people that go out kicking and screaming. But she could let go really, really, really sincerely, really honestly. And her life was really peaceful then. And her passing was very peaceful. So I guess that's a real test of our generosity. Whether we can really let go of life even. But the practice of generosity, is a foundation, you can say. And if you can learn how to apply it in practical ways, then it becomes something which is very familiar to us. And then when these moments come along, these moments when, our life is under threat or under stress, we learn how to let go. Most people, they want to hang on to their self. Is so used to taking things to themselves all the time. Pain comes along and it's my pain, right? Yeah. And the pain comes along, it's my pain, because I'm so used to hanging on to me all the time. But if one has practiced generosity, the pain comes along and, hey, you can have it. I can let it go. I can give it up. Who wants it? No, I've practiced an attitude of mind of letting go, so when the pain comes, I can let it go too. And then this is where now the the practice of generosity becomes, you can say, meditation then. So they all come together, a practice of generosity, morality, meditation. So that's a good foundation to start with. And then we go on to the next topic tomorrow, next week. We'll keep developing these foundations in the paramitas, these qualities that lead to Buddhahood. In a way, there's a kind of like building up, you can say, a more stable foundation for the spiritual exercise, the spiritual practice. So we try and develop them as much as we can, and maybe at the end we're ready for Buddhahood. So I think I should pause there this evening.